To see examples of what we talk about on the show, along with links to further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops. Christmas from Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. I am your host, Dallas Busha, and with me today,
Dr. Don. No, this is Al.
Otherwise known as Dr. Morbius.
A.K.A. the Christmas Elf.
Yeah.
And I'm Don.
And this is Don.
And this is Dallas.
And I'm Dallas. So, Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays, whatever you celebrate.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad. It's great to be back, and it's great to be with the guys on this holiday season.
What podcast is this, 71?
This is episode number 71.
71, yeah, Christmas.
Yeah, for anyone keeping track or counting or caring.
All right.
It's really nice to see you guys. I'm really stoked, personally, because I love the holidays. This is my favorite time of the year, and I'm a big goof for Christmas. I've got my Snoopy stuffed animal right next to me, dressed up like Santa Claus. So I'm all ready to roll.
Yeah, you are big on Christmas. You always have been.
I am, yeah. Ellie and I go crazy over it. So how have you guys been? Anything new?
No, not a lot. Yeah. Just, you know, reading comics and all sorts of stuff like that.
How's the holiday season treating you there, Don?
Busy. Yeah. It's good, but busy.
Are you going to get to see your daughter for Christmas?
Yeah, she'll be down in a week or two.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, no, that's great.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm really excited. We always end up having a couple, you know, mini Christmases, one at our house, and then we go to see Ellie's parents, and then we go to my family's. And this year we're going to see our nephew and niece. And our nephew, he's almost three now, so he's old enough finally to really appreciate Christmas. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be his first really cool Christmas. And he wants some really neat stuff. He wants some Ninja Turtles. He wants Master Chief from the Halo video game, like a doll of him. So it's going to be a good Christmas. I'm looking forward to it.
Sounds cool, man.
I've been reading some comics, too. I know all of us have.
Christmas comics?
Yeah, I got a few Christmas comics. I don't know if you guys do. But how about we talk about some of our favorite all-time Christmas comics?
Okay, I've got one.
Come on, Morbius.
Just to get you into the spirit of Christmas. And get ready for the little bell or whatever. It's from EC Comics, actually.
Ding, ding.
Thank you. This was a story that I first saw in the movie Tales from the Crypt when I was a kid back in 70 or whatever. And, of course, the comic book is drawn by the great Johnny Craig. It's called All Through the House. It's basically about a woman who, on Christmas Eve, decides to murder her husband and is hiding his body. Now, this is just to get you in the holiday spirit.
Yeah,
let's try
really,
this at home, kids.
This is a real feel-good.
This is a real feel-good storyline.
Yeah.
So anyway, while she's disposing of the body inside the house, she hears on the phone that there's a maniac loose dressed like Santa Claus. And as she's trying to dispose of the body within the house, she hears something outside the house trying to break in, and she sees that it's the maniac breaking into her house. But she has a dilemma now. What should she do? Should she call the police? Because if she calls the police, they might come in and inspect the house and see her dead husband there. So
she needs a Christmas miracle.
So in true EC fashion, well, you'll have to read the story. We'll post it on the blog or whatever. But yeah, just to get you in the spirit of Christmas,
nice.
That's one of my favorite Christmas stories, right?
I'm
there.
Absolutely not surprised that it's an EC comic.
Yeah.
I think that's great. That even though it's Christmas and it's, you wouldn't think, you know, horror stories would lend themselves to Christmas.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty clever.
You know, Doc Morbius here found a way.
I found one for you, so.
Well, what else do you have? Don't you have something else to get us into the spirit of
Christmas? Well, I got this spirit book here that I found. It's just funny because this will be the old nostalgia trip or whatever.
It's the original Spirit by Will Eisner, right?
It's the Warren started reprinting the Spirits back in the, I think, 74 or 73. And this is a Christmas issue, issue 12 from February 76. I'm pretty sure this is the issue that I bought at U Totem back in the old days or whatever, and I just found it in one of the boxes, and it seems like it's in pretty damn good shape. But what's cool about it was it more so than actually the stories in it, which are good stories. I mean, great stories. I just remember like going out and hanging out, playing basketball at like at the park or whatever, and then afterwards taking a walk with my friends down to the U Totem, which is probably like a mile away. And then, you know, just buying this and maybe like a Slurpee or something like that and walking back home and like being all excited because, oh my God, you know, this is so cool, the spirit, and it's a Christmas issue and all that. So I kind of miss that, you know, being able to go to like a local store and, you know, finding something like this.
You know, I think that's kind of appropriate because a lot of Christmas is about nostalgia and, you know, the good experiences you had as a kid. So that's a really good memory, especially because it's kind of Christmas-oriented.
Yeah. When you mentioned the Christmas show, just like I was going through boxes, and I was like, holy crap, look at that. And I was like, shoot, I remember buying that at the Christmas issue, so it's perfect for the show. So there you go. That's my other... I'm sure I bought it before Christmas because, you know, the books came out. Like, I think it says... Well, no, I take it back. It might have been around Christmas because it does have a February date. So it was probably about November, maybe, of that
That's
year.
About right, because comics used to have, like, what, 2 to 3 months ahead
of time? 2 to 3 months ahead of time, yeah. And you know what? Let's ask Don. Don, do you know why that is?
What?
Why the books had a 3 month early date on them before? Was that because of they had a shelf life of 3 months before they pulled them? Or how did that work back then?
No, they didn't come out. I don't know. There was a story to that, but I never knew quite what it was.
Okay, I thought you knew. I thought maybe it was just...
I did know at one time, but yeah, they had to put them out at a certain time. It had something to do with distribution and shelf life.
And then by the time that date hit, they got to be pulled off the shelves and sent back to the distributor to get... Back then, what they would do was, I guess, they would rip the cover, the spirit part of the cover, and then that way, just mail that, send that back to the whoever it was, the distributor, and they get a partial refund on it or whatever.
Yeah, and then sometime in the, I don't know, it was the late 60s, early 70s, they told the distributors, just we'll trust you, just say whatever.
Yeah.
So they didn't send the books back, they just got credit for it, which was, to me, a mistake.
When I was a kid, I don't know what happened to him, but one time there was a friend of ours, I think he worked at a print shop, and he sent back to my friend's house, his son's house actually, a box full of comics with the tops cut off. So he had like a box of maybe like a couple hundred books or whatever. I don't know if I took them or not, but it was like primo, like late 60s, early 70s stuff or whatever. So yeah, you know.
Hey, free comics, and if you're missing a cover, big deal, you know?
I mean,
you got
free
some
comic
great comics and good entertainment right there.
Yeah, you're getting like prime Marvels and prime DCs. I mean, the resale value's nothing, but you're getting a great comic book for free. You know, I don't, like I said, I don't know if I kept them or not, because I don't see any comic books in my house with like half the top covers. So I guess he must have kept them or whatever. But yeah, that's another kind of a cool thing about, you know, those days. But yeah, I'd forgotten the story about the 3 month in advance thing, but it probably has something to do with the time you have to send the book back to the distributor. Nowadays with the comic shops, they just keep them. That was Phil Suling, direct publishing or direct sales or whatever they call it. So.
Well, when I think of Christmas and comic books together, three issues always come to mind. And they're three books, and I'll speak briefly about them that I read when I was younger. And pretty much every Christmas or so, I try to go back and reread them because it gives me that sense of nostalgia. One of them is an old Ninja Turtle comic book. It's called Michelangelo. It was a one-shot. It came out in, I want to say, 86, 87, maybe, around that time. And I was going to dig it out today, but I don't know where it's at. But it was a single issue, and it had to do with just Michelangelo the Ninja Turtle just kind of parading through New York, downtown New York City, during Christmas time, going shopping for his brothers and for April, and just picking out gifts, and he meets a stray cat, and he becomes friends with the cat, and him and the cat go into like a big toy store. It's supposed to be kind of like a Macy's, and they go through and play with all the toys, and they end up stopping a robbery. You know, it turns into a little adventure, but it's just a really fun, lighthearted story, and it's kind of done in one, and I really, really liked it, and I try to read that one every single year.
Okay.
The other two are both X-Men, big surprise.
Yeah.
But the first one, I had to go dig this out. I figured I had it. The old Uncanny X-Men number 98, Chris Claremont and Dave Cockrum. It's actually the first Christmas issue that they did together, and It's the issue where the Sentinels return, Stephen Lang's Sentinels, and they attack the X-Men, and ultimately that's how Jean Grey becomes Phoenix. It's a great issue because it takes place during Christmas, and just like the Ninja Turtles comic, all the X-Men are downtown in New York City, and there you see people ice skating in the background, and it's snowing, and they're going shopping, and Jean and Scott are going out to dinner for the night, and it's just a really nice, kind of calm issue, and it's the first issue of Claremont's run where you see his knack for dialogue and character-driven stories, because you kind of learn a little more about each of the characters. And that's one that always stuck out with me. The other issue, I got to pull it up here. I don't have the actual issue, but I have it on my Nook here. It's Uncanny X-Men number 172.
It's Paul Smith issue.
It's a Paul Smith issue. It's part of Paul Smith's run, and it's one of the first X-Men comics I've read, and I flippin' love it. This one takes place in Japan, right before Wolverine is supposed to get married to his love, Mariko. And they're in Japan at Mariko's apartment, and it takes place during Christmas, which is really neat. And the first few pages are just great, the X-Men kind of meeting Mariko for the first time and talking, and it's snowing outside. And that always gave me a warm and fuzzy feeling, you know, reading that. I think whenever Christmas is present in a comic book, it just makes me really excited. I think it's great. So those three issues I always think of, and I try to read every single year.
You know what I remember, too? Now you jog my memory, and Don probably remembers this, too. Remember when they used to put out called Archie's Christmas Stocking?
Yeah, yeah.
They used to put out the Archie Christmas issue, and it would always... I remember having some, I think, I forgot, I think it was Dan DiCarlo who drew them or something like that. And I do remember getting some of those when I was a kid, back in the, like, they were 25 cents. They were the larger size issue. So, yeah, that's some of the Christmas comics that I do remember, once we talk more and more, you'll jog my memory even more, and I remember more stuff. But what about you, Don? What's your Christmas comic?
Well, you know, when Dallas told me what he's wanted to do on the show, I thought, okay, I'm all for it. This is, but I'll be honest, I've never really cared for Christmas comics. It's kind of funny. Cause
you're such a Scrooge.
I love Christmas. I never enjoyed it when I see books about Christmas. I mean, I read them, you know. And, Fantagraphics has been putting out those Carl Barks, Donald Duck, and Uncle Scrooge stories, and two of those books they released were the Christmas stories he did. I've got them. I've read them, and that's one of my stories I liked was the Donald Duck one. But Christmas stories, I don't know. I just feel they, you can only read them around the Christmas time, and I'd rather just read them all year long. Saying that, when I was, I think, 13 years old, I was in eighth grade, DC was putting out those large, oversized Treasury editions for a dollar. And you know the one I'm talking about.
I don't have it, yeah.
The first
one,
it was called Christmas with the Superheroes. It was a Nick Carty cover, who we all three had met. But it was Santa Claus in the middle and had Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. And I love that issue dearly. Me and my friend both bought a copy at U Totem.
Nice.
Was that a franchise?
It was like a 7-Eleven, but they had a different distributor than 7-Eleven, so they would get other books at 7-Eleven. You can get the Warren books at U Totem, but you couldn't get them at 7-Elevens.
Yeah, the sign was U Totem, and they had a totem pole on the sign.
And at U Totem, the guy, they displayed the dirty books on the shelf, and the guy would sell them to me, so it was all good. Anyway,
so... Don, do you have a favorite Christmas special? A TV show? Movie?
No. But then, Rudolph Red-Nosed Reindeer, I would like. But no, the comic, the Christmas superheroes, I was heavily into superheroes like we all were when we were kids. But the one story that always stayed out with me in that book, it was an Angel and the Ape story.
Did Wally Wood do it or Bob Oxnard?
It was Bob Oxnard. And it was an unpublished story. I don't know if it was new.
Oh, it was in the Treasury edition.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And it's basically about Christmas. I can't tell you the whole plot of the story. I just remember at the end, they did something to Angel. You know, Angel was a dumb blonde, you know, real kooky like they always have in the cartoons and comics. The ape was a talking gorilla. And they were a detective agency?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And at one point, I guess it was some kind of gas and it made her mean. And then the ape said, that doesn't sound anything like her. And he thought, there's something wrong. So he popped her on the head, and she turned back into herself again. But the one part that always killed me, that me and my friend always talked about, was at the end, Santa Claus is there. There's all these goons trying to steal all the Christmas toys. And Angel and Abe was trying to convince Santa they had to fight. And Santa's like, well, I'm ordinarily against violence. And the next panel says, but they're trying to steal our Christmas toys. So they have Santa, elves, Angel and Abe all fighting these goons.
Oh, yeah.
To me, that is a Christmas story. And I actually have another one. Not being outdone, Marvel put out one of their Treasury editions, and it had a Luke Cage story in it. It was a reprint. I never really read Luke Cage very much, but it was the strangest story that I can't ever get past. And basically, Luke Cage is walking out there, and there was some guy beating a kid with an oak walking stick. And he was dressed like, you know, Victorian age type. And Luke Cage goes in there to stop him.
Was it Scrooge?
Well, it was just some Dickens-looking white guy in New York City. And when Luke Cage stops him from beating the kid, he strikes Luke Cage with it, and it freaks out that, you know, the stick was solid oak and it didn't hurt Luke Cage, and he stopped him and made him go. Then later on, there's a Vietnam vet with no legs, which, you know, was really kind of vivid. And he's, you know, out there with the cop, you know, asking for money. And he just starts freaking out, pulls out a machine gun and mowing people down in the streets. Luke Cage stops him, you know, gives him help. And okay. And then at the very end, kind of find out they were both the same guy from different times. And he was saying he had a bomb to blow up the world. And he said, of all the people, this is in the past, if somebody would have beat a kid, everybody went there to stop him. But it was only Luke Cage that stopped him. And he was talking about the Vietnam vet, and you know nobody stepped in to do anything but Luke Cage. The world's not ready to go, so he tries to blow it up. Of course, Luke Cage stops him and walks out past Madison Square Gardens, all mixed up in snow and Christmas stuff. Kind of an odd Christmas story, but it's one I like. But I do believe there's more good people than Luke Cage walking the planet.
Now, do you remember? Again, my memory got jogged again. Do you remember DC put out a, this was later on, this is when they were doing the dollar books, like in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it was a Frank Miller Batman Christmas story. Oh, I got to find that one. I have it at home somewhere. I remember it was kind of cool. And it was one of the few things, one of the early things that he did for DC. It was called DC's, I don't even remember what the name of it was. I'll have to find it online. You guys don't remember that one. Okay, that was the other Christmas comic that I do kind of remember getting back, because they had a Garcia Lopez story in it, and it had, the first one was the Frank Miller Batman thing.
If we can find it after the show, Don will throw it in the show notes on our blog.
There's a bunch of Christmas stories. I mean, my brother liked this old Superman story, again reprinted, but it's about some rich kid that, you know, didn't appreciate anything at the very end of the book. He was, Superman did something to convince him, and at the end of the book, the kid was giving gifts away. He said, it's more fun to give than receive. And, again, the Carl Barks books, that's one I always loved, was he bought his three nephews buckskin jackets with a fringe that everybody liked in the 50s and 60s. And I can't remember exactly what caused it, but something happened, and Donald Duck got a shotgun, blew a hole through the closet. Oh.
What a jerk.
The kid, no. I remember why. The kids were sledding all the time, the three nephews. And they got a deer, a buck, and hit him. And they hit him in the closet, and Donald Duck was freaking out, and he shot at it was a deer or a moose. And then ended up he shot the buckskin jackets. And he said, now they're really rustic. Mm. So the story ends with the buck pulling up the three nephews on their toboggans at the top. And it basically, what the whole gist of the story was trust and being honest. And that was the code of Duckburg. And these kids are wearing these buckskin jackets with, you know, shotgun holes in it. They said, but Uncle Donald knows not to say anything because we won't either. So that's the code of Duckburg. I don't know why I butchered the story, but that was a Christmas story I always liked.
Sounds good.
There's a ton of Christmas stories that I think we've probably all read.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's just a few, those few stick out in our minds. But if we can think of any more, we'll throw them on the blog, too.
All right.
We could.
You want to take a music break?
Let's take a nice little music break. We're going to play something appropriately Christmassy. So enjoy.
Hark the herald angels sing, glory. glory to the newborn King. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Joyful all ye nations rise, join the triumph of the skies. With the angelic hosts proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King. Christ the highest heaven adored, Christ the everlasting Lord. Late in time, behold him come, offspring of a virgin's womb. Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see, hail the incarnate deity. Pleased as man with man to dwell, Jesus of Emmanuel. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King.
Find the most recent 20 episodes of the show on iTunes. If you'd like to hear older episodes, go to our blog at bunchofdorks.com. And we're back! We've got a special little surprise. So, this being the Christmas episode, we've all bought each other presents. And so I thought it would be fun to pass out the presents right now, and we can all open them up on air. So, who would like to go first?
Al.
Okay.
Al.
Alright, am I going to take or give? I'll give.
I'll give out your gifts.
I'm a giving kind of guy.
Give out your gifts.
And I really didn't buy your presents. I shoplifted them, so I hope you appreciate it. Because I took, you know.
Beat up an old lady.
No, I wouldn't do that. Well, Don saw this in the garage, and he figured you'd get a kick out of it. So there you go.
It's a Comics Journal episode with Cerebus. The Comics Journal issue with Cerebus and Dave Sim. Oh, it's awesome.
That's an oldie goldie.
I love it. It's like a pretty big article with...
Yeah, they always had, like, humongous...
Thanks, man! Sweet!
And
that is awesome!
He saw that, and he said, you'd like that, too, so there you go.
Oh, sweet! Look, man, I feel a little bad now. Love and Rocket, Short Stories by Jaime Hernandez. Oh, my gosh, awesome! Ooh. Thank you, Al!
All right, man.
This is the best Christmas set.
Here you go, Don.
Okay. I got, the first issue of Rubber Blanket.
Now you have one and two.
We're all big David Mazzucchelli fans. Most of us know from Daredevil and Batman Year One.
I just read Asterios Polyp again the other day.
Yeah, and then we've all talked about Asterios Polyp, which we're big fans of. I had heard he was working on Rubber Blanket, so a friend of mine showed me a story he did called Big Man, which is incredible. But I've never actually seen a physical issue. Al gave me the second issue one time, and this time he gave me the first one.
So now you have, I don't know if that's a complete set or not, there may have been more.
I've never seen these in the stores.
No, those are from like the late 80s or the early 90s.
Reading the second one, I thought it was a bunch of different artists, and it was two other people that did stories, but most of the was David Mazzucchelli. And he went to style, and I'll be honest, I don't like most of the styles he works with. But
they're very crude, but they're different.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again...
It was jarring when you're going from Daredevil to that, but now I appreciate it for... Because after I read Asterios Polyp, I could see the guy doesn't necessarily fall under one style. He can work in different, you know.
That's something that amazes me, is when some people... You know, we always talk about Mobius. I'd have Mobius books, and this one lady said, one person didn't draw all these. Yeah, it's the same guy. But he could jump from one thing to another. A lot of times you have artists... You can always, no matter what they do, you can tell that it's them. Which, again, is something I do enjoy. But this is shocking that he's playing around, you know, just doing whatever he wants to do. And some of it I love dearly. And some of it I'm thinking, well, I could kind of do without. But He's not afraid to take chances.
And speaking of Mobius.
Oh, man.
You don't have
what?
That, do you?
That's a hard one to get.
All right, there you
wow,
go.
That's
I did
awesome.
Good.
This is Jim Cutler.
This is Mobius Volume 8.
Oh, from Epic.
Mobius started with awesome. Mobius started out as a Western artist, and he had a comic strip with how do you pronounce that guy's name? Chevalier?
I don't know.
They had a really successful strip called Lieutenant Blueberry, and Epic put those out, and it ran for, I think, 35 years, and after the writer had passed away, Mobius continued to do the strip, which I haven't seen those. But I guess at one point, they were having trouble negotiating a new contract with a publisher. So Mobius and Chevalier went on and created another character called Jim Cutlass. And instead of
So that's not Blueberry, okay.
No, it was Jim Cutlass.
Right.
And he was a Southern gentleman. Blueberry was a Southern gentleman that fought for the Union Army.
Right.
And ended up out in Arizona and Utah and those places. But after the Civil War. But this guy is a Southern gentleman. And I don't know much about it. I just read a little bit. But I guess they had plans. But they just did the one story. And then the negotiations came through and Blueberry came back.
Well, there you go.
Well, and this was really tough to find.
Well, it was in the garage, so it was tough to find for me. But I found it, damn it.
That's awesome.
Well,
thank you so much, Al.
Right on.
No, I feel kind of bad.
All right. Well, I take money also if you guys.
Yeah.
All right.
That's some money.
Well, let me go first. Second.
Okay.
All right, if you don't mind. All right. Everyone knows that Dallas is talking on the show about Art Spiegelman and Moz. Big fan, I think.
Is it Mouse?
Yeah, Mouse. I say Moz, but I think it's Mouse.
It's Mouse.
I say Potato.
Yeah,
Potato.
No. Anyway, nevertheless, it's a good work of art. So I got a book for Dallas. That actually kind of surprised me, because I hope he's not disappointed, because it's not what I thought it was going to be.
Oh, that's a nice book.
Oh, my gosh.
But this is
Art Spiegelman Breakdowns.
Now, if you notice the logo, he did it in process colors. It's, you know, magenta, yellow, cyan, and black. And I thought it was going to be a lot of short stories, which are in there. But basically, he's taking you through the printing process.
Ah.
And it depends on what you're looking for. Sometimes it's incredible. He even has color proofs.
Oh, yeah. Like, it looks like that Raw magazine that he used.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
Well,
thank you, Don.
No, you're welcome.
Damn.
At work, when we started doing the four-color process colors, the four-color firm used to put out, you know, color proofs, your print matches. And that's what he's got in there.
Oh, so there's an episode of Mouse in here.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got a little bit of everything, but he's got that one story he did, the father founded Mouse, about...
The Hell Planet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That whole piece is in there, which
just saw
is,
it,
to me,
know.
Worth the book itself.
That is awesome. Man, you guys really went above and beyond. Thank you.
All right, and for Al...
Oh, I'm still looking at this book.
You can look at it.
Okay.
But I do know that, like myself, he's a big Darwin Cook fan. So.
Oh, wow, man. I didn't have this. Cool.
Nice.
The book's called...
Ego.
Batman Ego and Other Stories.
All right. I do like his work. I think they just put out a Parker.
Yeah, it's not out yet. I'm going to get... That's the fourth Parker book. The Batman Ego, I bought that when it came out. And what it was... He was working on the animated series in Batman Beyond, and he wanted to do a comic book. So he did a story about Batman Ego, and it's where the Batman character is talking to Bruce Wayne. It's one of the stories everybody tells about who he really is. Is he Bruce Wayne or is he Batman? And it was, you know, a psychological thing. I bought it because it was different, but it reminded me a lot of the animated series.
Oh, Paul Grist also.
Paul Grist did a little bit of work on it. But that story was shelved. I guess nobody knew what to do with it. And it's when Mark Chiarello, you know, became the editor.
Yeah.
He had this big pile of submissions that the other guy had. And usually what happens when a new editor takes over, they just, you know, shovel it all in the trash and start over. And I guess he was sorting through all this. He ran across this, which had been sitting there on that desk for years. And he pulled it out and says, why haven't they published it? So he published it to a square-bound, you know, single issue. And then after that, Darwin Cook started doing more stories. He did a Catwoman miniseries with Jay Bone.
Oh,
and he did covers to, well, Dallas looking at the Batman Gotham Adventures, the animated series comic. He did some short stories in Batman Black and White. You know, he just a lot of different things, but this also his solo issue, which I really like. A lot of the stories are in this.
It's a really nice package here.
It's a nice package, but it's a lot of stuff that people that didn't know Darwin Cook before, you know, and I really like that cover.
So he wasn't necessarily working for DC at this time? Did it on his own and submitted
it? Well, the Batman Ego he did, yeah.
Okay.
But the rest of the stuff, he was, you know, they'd hire him out to do submissions.
Pretty cool, man.
I think it has Selena's big score in it, too.
Yeah, I just passed by it.
Yeah, that's another, I got that one, too.
Oh, because it says Ego and Other Tales, yeah. I gotcha.
It's a nice package.
It's a sweet book,
if
yeah.
If you haven't bought the other ones before.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I do like his work a lot, yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah.
Is the Hanukkah over?
Yeah, but, you know.
There you go.
All right.
Well,
you
so wrap,
I
you wrap
the book.
I wrapped mine.
So you get to hear me ripping the paper open and stuff like that.
To Dr. Morbius from Big D.
All right.
Look at that. It's a Whitman sampler. Wow.
Yeah.
Well.
Ooh, looks like...
Now, I hope you don't have this.
No, I don't have
so
this.
So, I was at Yancey
Velvet,
Street.
Brubaker, Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting.
All right, tell us about
it. Here's the thing. This is what I did for...
Cool.
I went to Yancey Street, and I wanted to find... I did this for Rook also. I wanted to find a series that I thought you'd like, or at least a writer or an artist that I knew
you liked.
Yeah, I do. And I wanted to get a number one, so hopefully if you liked it, you could continue the series.
Is this new, or is this...
This is brand new.
Oh,
this
it
probably
is.
Came... Well, they might be on issue 2 or 3 or something. I don't know. But it was, yeah, it was up in the stands at Yancey, so it looked good, and it looked like a, you know, like criminal in that
criminal,
style.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I thought you'd like it.
Yeah, I do like Steve Epting's work a lot, and Brubaker's a great writer.
Yeah,
thanks a lot, man.
And you like Brubaker in that.
Yeah, I read the Fatale, so that's Brubaker and Sean Phillips, so this is really nice.
Yep.
All right, thank
cool.
you.
Cool, yeah, no problem. And there you go.
All right, thanks. Yeah, I felt really bad when I saw Dallas wrap them when we did.
It says to Thor from Volstagg.
Oh, there you go. Well, thanks. Yeah. A Parker pen and pencil set. Hey, Dallas?
Yeah.
I got some crayons for you, too.
Oh, it's an X-Men coloring book. Wow.
Okay, I got X-Men versus Avengers.
Yeah, now this is, it's Uncanny Avengers, I think it's called. And
and I got the first
Walking
Dead.
Cool.
This
yeah.
is the Tony Moore stuff.
That's the Tony Moore. That's the run that Tony Moore did. Now, I know we always talk about Walking Dead, obviously. You've got the whole run. You've read.
Yeah,
most
not
of
the
it,
whole
probably.
Run. No, I've read about 30, 40
And
issues.
I think Don had any of the Walking Deads.
No, I
so
didn't.
And
that was just a little aside. I actually ended up reading that one, the Uncanny Avengers. I wasn't a fan. It's written by Rick Remender.
Oh, I thought it was Avengers versus X-Men. Uncanny.
It is. It's both of them, but the title, I think, is called Uncanny Avengers.
Oh, let me see. Who draws
Rick
it?
Rick Remender and John Cassidy.
Yeah, John Cassidy draws it, so the art's great.
It looks pretty nice.
I liked Rick Remender. He did Fear Agent. I love that book. I wasn't a big fan of this comic here, but I think you'll like it. Like, it's got the characters you'll like.
Okay.
So it's not the X-Men. It's the Uncanny Avengers, not the Uncanny X-Men.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's number one.
I'll tell you, I've read this Walking Dead. I think you'd lend one to me. And I really like Tony Moore's artwork.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why he left the series.
I'm wondering if it's, you know, maybe it was the writer.
Or Speed. Well, because they were friends before they got big. I
mean, well, you know, they did a few things together.
They got into some kind of hassle over Walking Dead.
Well, you know, if Rook didn't have a hangover and he was here,
yeah,
he could tell us.
He could tell us, exactly. they got into a hassle over money, but then I see Tony Moore's name on this show, so I'm wondering what was the problem.
Well, he's continued to do the covers.
He gets a kickback.
I think he's continued to do the covers for Walking Dead.
Not that Charlie Adlard guy?
He does the interiors, but I think Okay. Tony Moore does it, but
all right.
I keep once in a while you listen to podcasts and they talk about it. But one of the problems I heard was after he left the series, he didn't feel like he was getting enough of a cut because he helped develop that story when him and Rob McKurgan were just two guys wanting to do comics. And, you know, he was more than just the artist of the series. And so I don't know. And I hear all sides. I hear some people put it down about you never should have left and, you know, Rob McKurgan created it. And I hear other people say that it's like we were just talking about bands. You know, bands, every member adds something to it. And eventually when bands are new and start out, all the members of the band are putting everything they got into it. It's a good album. And it basically turns into one or two people in the band are writing the songs and telling everybody, dictating how it's going to be, and it always kind of turns flat.
Yeah.
So I don't know. All I'm saying is I really like Tony Moore's art. Charlie Adler looks really good, but after reading this first one and knowing that that's the end of Tony Moore, I've just never bothered to go read anymore.
Now, you're in a band, Dallas. How do you feel about that statement that we made? Or Don
to,
made?
To an extent, I can see that. We all... We've been together for so long, and we our output has been fairly high, I guess. We scrap songs as much as we write them, though. We all go in stages, I feel like. Sometimes one or two of us might be really exuberant about some music, and we might be in that mood to write music. And so, you know, for a period of a few months, there might be a couple of us that are writing and showing the rest of the band and saying, well, try this, let's try it, let's do this. And then sometimes... everybody gets in on it, but I don't know. For the most part, we take turns.
All right.
Well, when you know, one thing, I knew Dallas when they had a different singer in the band when you were called in to Dim. And then when you got another singer, I noticed that the songs changed. You were bringing in practices, and they still did some of the old songs, but it seemed to me like you were reworking them.
Yeah.
And then when Brent joined the band, who's been on the show, it seemed like you reworked them even further. So in that case, even though, you know, you're just changing the singer.
You're right.
You're
just
taking his input.
Absolutely. And like you said, Brent, he plays rhythm guitar, well, lead also. He plays second guitar. And so just having that second guitarist has added a completely new dimension to all of the songs. So like you were saying about each individual member, just adding Brent has changed every single one of our songs.
Yeah.
For the better.
But, I mean, I get to hear the practice stuff, and every time I hear him, can we play this on the show? No. But I can hear the change in it. I mean, it's the same band, same structure, but it's different, and I can hear the input of the new member.
Well, you've got a good ear for that. I know you like to hear that. That's why I keep on sending you our practice sessions.
You know, that's one thing, and this isn't a Christmas theme anymore. But
God bless us, everyone.
We're living in a society. Al and I grew up at a time where everything was just coming out. Rock bands.
Yep.
Everything was just... they were just seeing what would stick to the wall. And it was part of the major culture. And everything was new. And even if a band broke up, different members of different bands would come together and put another band together, which was great and exciting. And it's something that doesn't happen any longer that I see. But comics were always new. That's mine. But all kinds of new stuff was happening. And now we always joke about it. It seems like it's just cover bands. You know, it's bands, if they made it big like some bands, they just keep playing their old stuff, and they don't do anything new. And
You're talking about, yes, getting a new singer and stuff
also,
like that.
Always, you know, or you get a band like Eagles, you know, that, you know, get together and do a big tour. And
not the Eagles.
I still call them the Eagles, but I'm tired of you correcting me every time I mention them. So, I listened to a show with you and CK on Destination Nightmare. So I always hear you, and I never met CK, and I'm scared to say it because I'm afraid you're going to come over and correct me. But it's not even a band.
Because I'm reading the book on Eagles.
And the cover, you notice, it says the story of the Eagles.
It does say it, so I'm confused
so
now.
You don't have to be confused, but that's not even the point. But the point is, it just seems to me like everybody's guarding their copyright, trying to keep everything the same, and nothing ever changes. And they're saying now it's a do-it-yourself society. You know, everybody's got computers, you can record stuff, you can do this and that. Dallas just made his own book over here. I'm losing my point now. What are you talking about?
You know, I listen to Spotify a lot, which is... It's like Pandora Radio.
Yeah, I like Spotify.
I hook it up on my laptop while I'm working, and you can basically punch in any band you want. It'll have, chances are it'll have their entire catalog, and so you can listen to it. And it also has recommendations like Pandora does. And I love it, and I've found so much great music through that. And it's a good outlet. And yeah, a lot of these newer contemporary bands, they're recording their own albums. They're engineering things themselves because that equipment is out there for you. And the quality's amazing. It's staggering. You know, even when they're doing their own, you know, do-it-yourself recordings at home. Because as I listen to all this, and I listen to a huge variety of music and professional and amateur artists, and I mean, all this stuff sounds great as far as the recording quality.
Hey, speaking of the do-it-at-home thing, you being the musician guy, I want you to see if you can explain something to me. Now that we're two-dimension musical podcast, we've morphed from Christmas comics to musical podcasts now. Speaking of the do-it-at-home, do-it-yourself thing, what's the deal with Pro Tools? Why is it that people say that, you know, people at Pro Tools can, like, do all this stuff, but they can't play live? Can you, like, overdub and do things, like, you know, fix things?
Oh, yeah. We use a couple different recording programs, and one of them, we use one called PreSonus, and that's where we record and track the guitars and the drums. I use a program called FL Studio, and I hook up my keyboard through a MIDI port, and I play synth and stuff, you know.
Okay.
All that's live for the most part. But also in FL Studio, there's a great drum program, recording program, okay, where you can set it up. It's like a beat editor, and you can make beats and, like, record a drum sound, you know, or not record it, but put it together, you know, step by step.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can change each individual sound to make them sound like a real drum set. So quite often, these bands are actually piecing together their drum beats, or the drummer, to save time, or if he doesn't want, or if he isn't able to record it in a studio or record it live, he'll just put it together in a drum editor. And so, yeah, chances are he might build something and create this drum beat that's light years beyond his own performance. Maybe he can't do it live, you know?
Okay, but I'm going to turn this into comics now.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to see how you do it.
Watch me work. See, nowadays, there are programs where you can actually draw comics on your computer. Which one do you use for the Mighty Blue? Do you use Photoshop to draw the Mighty Blue?
I use Photoshop to color it, but I just hand draw and scan it.
Okay. Because there's programs like, I was talking to Don about Manga Studios, and I'm sure there's other ones, where you can basically take a drawing, say you scan a pencil or scan an original or a pen and ink one, and you basically can put it on there, and you can pretty much redo it, add to it, you know, color it and all that stuff on the computer, whereas back then you had to do it physically, like on a piece of paper, draw it, you know, make sure that each panel is good, because if you get a bad panel, the page is screwed, kind of. Nowadays, through these programs, you can actually fix it and make it, like, you know, a complete, you know, beautiful, finished piece of work. So I guess it works in art, too. But I'm wondering if that's what, you know, some bands were talking about, how, like, you know, yeah, that's great. You can do it on Pro Tools. You can fix this and that. But when you go and you play it live, you can't play it or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and along with drums and even guitarists, you can multi-track,
overdub guitar tracks.
Yeah, so you can put 3 or 4 or 5, 6 different guitar tracks over each other and build it up and beef it up to make it sound louder, heavier, more technical, just whatever you want, you can do.
So you don't have to go to a recording studio anymore, basically, unless you want a certain sound.
Your computer is a recording studio.
Wow, that's amazing. Your computer is a comic book studio, too, now, if you want it to be.
Yeah.
Or a painting.
The difference is you still have to record the instruments. You still have to, you know, be able to record that.
Which, sure,
I think you've been having an issue with your band, being able to have enough.
We're just more than likely trying to find time to record. The different ways we've tried to record, I'll plug my guitar directly into the computer and record just a clean sound. And then afterwards, like I'm doing in post, I'll add different effects and things. You can purchase effects packages online. We've tried that. We've also tried, which I think always gives you a more genuine feel, and how they used to do it, is miking my amp and recording it that way.
Oh,
get like right. a good USB mic, hang it, put it in front of a speaker in your amp, put it in a closet or a small room, and then record it that way. So we've tried it a few ways, and we're just really slow with things.
Okay, all right. Well, that actually brings me back to what I was originally going to say, and I forgot.
See, it's circular.
It's circular. It is like jazz.
It is a Christmas miracle.
It is a Christmas miracle.
But, you know, I love the creative process. You know, I like it when the Beatles put out the Beatles anthology, and it was all, you know, a friend of mine was kind of cynical about that, saying when the anthologies came out, the Beatles turned out to be the biggest recording moneymakers, and they weren't even a band anymore year. And a friend of mine was just cynical, saying that that stuff wasn't good enough to put out in the 60s when the Beatles were around, but now it's a big seller. So he was looking at it as a slide. Well, I was trying to explain to him it wasn't that. It was like looking through an artist's sketchbooks. It wasn't
exactly.
the finished product.
Exactly.
But you can still see where they came up to that. But I guess really the only people who are interested in that is other practitioners. I'm not a musician, but I love to hear the creative process.
I do too.
I like to look through sketchbooks.
I do too.
And but he is right. That kind of stuff in the 60s when I was a kid, people, well, this isn't finished. What is this? And it seems to me like all society, you see guys buying toys that they had when they were kids.
Yep.
And it's like you're just trying to recapture your childhood. It's not like you're trying to progress anymore. I like that comic strip Calvin Hobbes. You know, the guy did it for 10 years, and then he said that was enough, and he stopped. Well, he came back and did a brief interview, which is something, because you know, he's completely out of the limelight. But one of the questions they asked was, in the comic strip, he would have drawings of the boy and the tiger in the strip dancing. Well, some people scan those in and make animated GIFs out of them, which are pretty neat, you know. And they were talking about, well, you must really enjoy seeing stuff like that, like sparking creativity. And his comment was, well, scanning somebody else's images and putting them together is not really sparking creativity, it's just a cataloging thing. And he said, that's all I'm really seeing now, is cataloging instead of going out and creating. It's not like you're sparking and you're out trying to create your own thing. You're just redoing what somebody else has done. I don't know. Like I said, I always think of that when we talk about old bands and now cover bands of themselves. Cover bands are a big thing. There's a lot of bands that are just trying to sound like their favorite band from the past. And it just seems to me like a lot of the comics that we have in the mainstream publishers, there's several that I'm reading now, which surprises me, that I like quite well. But it seems to me they're just trying to redo over and over what they've been doing since the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, there's only, I mean, I could be wrong. There's only certain storylines you can write. I mean, you can always, it's always about the embellishing or the changing or the
variations
on it, but there's only X amount of themes, you know. It's like boy meets girl, a journey, you know, whatever, you know, the battle between the two or whatever, you know. So I mean, there's only so much you can do. I just think that it's become to the point, not necessarily in comics, maybe more in music, where, you know, back when we were kids, you could hear the bands were going back in time to get the influences, and they were the original influences. Now, it seems to me like the bands are going back to get the influence, and the influences they're getting aren't the originals. They're like the guys who copied the originals.
Because
so you're getting like, it's almost like, you know,
you have such a bigger pool to dive into and look through, though. I mean,
yeah,
there's
that's
so
it
much
too.
More music now available easily for people to find.
That's it,
that,
too, yeah.
You know, their influences can be very varied.
I mean, it'd be nice if some people, bands, whoever, went back to the original blues rather than maybe somebody like Stevie Ray Vaughan or whatever, thinking that that's the original blues. No. Go back to John Lee Hooker, or go back to Muddy Waters, or go back even further than that.
Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson and stuff like that. I think that's part of it too, because, you know, they always say that the Beatles reinvented rock and roll. Well, somebody needs to reinvent rock and roll. You know, they need to go back. I mean, there's people out there, we've said it before, there's bands out there that don't get played on the radio, that you have to like either go see at a club or you have to listen to Pandora or whatever, and you'll find out about it and you go, oh, that's really good, you know, why don't I know about this band? Well, blame the radio, you know, blame the blame the media that doesn't cover it, that's more interested in covering Miley Cyrus or, you know, some crap like that.
Yeah. Well, if somebody likes that kind of stuff, that's fine, too. It's just that...
Oh, yeah, it's fine, too, but it's kind of like, that's why we can't find stuff, a lot of better things, because that seems to overwhelm the attention of whatever media. You know, I blame the media. I always blame the media, well, damn it. We are the media, so I blame myself.
It seems to me like there's still a lot of new stuff.
There is.
You know, once in a while, somebody will tell me about some band that I've never heard of.
Yes, yeah, you're right. From the olden days and the new days,
yeah, but
too.
It's not out in the mainstream anymore. They're not interested in that. They're interested in Hall of Fame. You know,
yeah.
Music is an abstract thing. When I say that, I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and really had a good time. But it seems to me like now they're not looking at new stuff or just putting out whatever. They're just looking at repackaging old stuff, which I guess has always been the case, but now there's a bunch of old stuff to repackage, as Dallas has pointed out.
That's why we're waiting for you to put out that music, Dallas, so you can pay the new way to go. You know, we need somebody to like lead, guide us. And
hold my hand, guys.
Through a new golden age.
You. All right. On that note, we're going to end the episode. Let's wrap it up, guys.
Wrap it up. Well,
thank you for everything. Thanks for the gifts, guys.
Yeah,
I had an awesome Christmas episode. Our first annual one, even though we've been around for a couple of years. I think this is the first Christmas one we've done, right?
Well, you had one where you played Christmas music.
Oh, yeah.
So are we going to do the New Year's episode next?
Maybe we will. Maybe we'll be around for another New Year's one. If not, take care of yourselves, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, you know, whatever you celebrate. Enjoy your hot cocoa and your eggnog, and we will see you soon. And
read more comics.
You can find my other podcast, Little Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and my blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar at our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go, take a look at the 5 and 10. It's glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes that glow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. A pair of hop-along boots and a pistol that shoots is the wish of Barney and Ben. Dolls that'll talk and will go for a walk is the hope of Janice and Jen. And Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go, there's a tree in the Grand Hotel, one in the park as well. It's the sturdy kind that doesn't mind the snow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Soon the bells will start, and the thing that'll make them ring is the carol that you sing right within your heart. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Sure, it's Christmas once more.